Senate State Affairs come to order. It is 8:13 a.m. on the 13th day of April 2016. We have two issues before us today. We have House Joint Resolution 14, which we heard a nearly identical version last year, and our continuing work on the Uniform Code of Military Justice. We'll take some testimony in today, but I think we're going to be losing quorum. It's our intent to try to get this out tomorrow morning. We'll continue. Just get a few things on the record that we are able to do in absence of quorums, if it, not be able to make decisions today. Welcome, Senator Representative Hughes and Mr. Krueger. We have a committee substitute before us. Senator Coghill,
version P.
It is version P.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move that we use as our working document the Senate CS for CS for Joint Resolution of 14 State Affairs version P. Papa,
I'll object, and it has some minor changes. The term on line 6 on page 1, the word utilizing was replaced with the word use. And the updates, changes in Congress since the measure was last before us. We'll keep Paul Ryan on there. I think we'll adjourn before the GOP has a convention, make sure he hasn't moved again. And that's just humor, hopefully. There's an updated administrative officer in the Senate just to comply. With that, I'll remove my objection. Is there any other objection to the Senate State Affairs Committee substitute? That'll give me something to talk about on the floor, I guess. Welcome, Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I enjoy being in front of three of my favorite senators this morning. I'm Shelley Hughes.
We're already going to move the bill.
Yeah. I'm Shelley Hughes, District 11, Palmer, and appreciate you taking a few minutes out, and this is probably deja vu, but just as a reminder, this is an Article 5 single amendment, a single issue convention call for counterman, which in the simplest terms means veto, and it is an effort to restore the balance between the state and federal government. And as I said over in the other body, I don't see the federal government as an enemy. They have done good things. They have done different things that have been important for our nation. They do, for instance, with our military, but sometimes they go too far, and sometimes people in Washington, D.C. just don't know what's best. And so, as a review from last year, this would allow add a mechanism to the Constitution through the Article 5 process, which would allow states to countermand or veto a federal decision, whether that be a law passed by Congress, a regulation put in place by a federal agency, a judicial decision, or an executive order. And the way that would work is if would offer to very quickly back up 34 states to call the convention. The states would convene, and at least a simple majority, 26, needed to approve the amendment. Then it would go out to the states. 38 states would need to ratify it. And once it were ratified, the mechanism itself would require 30 states, or three-fifths of the states, to agree within an 18-month period that a certain federal decision was not in their best interest, and that would make that decision null and void.
And I think it'd probably be helpful just to take a moment to describe the interplay between the other measure that's in the that's, I believe, in the Rules Committee now.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The other is HCR 4, and it is the delegate resolution. And one of the reasons why it's important, even though the resolution will probably be revisited if we did eventually get to the 34 states for the call. But one of the reasons why it's important for it to go through to be on the public record, because the delegate resolution sets the sidebars and the instructions, very specific, the parameters for the delegates, so that they know what they're being sent to do and will stay on the straight and narrow. We hold dear our U.S. Constitution, and we do not want it dismantled. And so that's I believe it's a of this particular effort, it's really a good thing, because many efforts have been tried like this, and some of them would make me nervous that it could go down the wrong road. So that resolution is hopefully will make it through your body along with this one, so to get that on the public record on the Senate side as well, Mr. Chair.
And that's, we've tried to keep these traveling together, so that's interesting. Are there any questions for the sponsors? I know there's a great conversance with this issue here already. Mr. Coons is signed up to testify from beautiful Palmer. Mr. Coons. Is he still online? There might be a technical problem. We'll stand just briefly at ease while we wait for that, so this, we don't have this awkward dead silence. State Affairs, back to order after the brief at ease. We're at public testimony. Is Mr. Coons available?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Mike Coons. I'm the National Legislative Director for Citizen Initiatives. We're the ones that have been working closely with Representative Hughes and yourself on getting this passed, and just wanted to thank you for all the hard work in getting this through, and I look forward to the debate on the Senate floor and final passage. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Mike. This is a record. I appreciate all the hard work you've done. Whatever we've done, it is dwarfed by the amount of work you and a lot of other citizens have put into this effort and the passion and research you've brought to it. Thanks a lot.
Oh, by the way, do you have a quorum enough to pass this out today?
That's our next motion.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
But thanks for checking out. This does not have a fiscal note, or it doesn't have a Senator Coghill.
It has a zero fiscal note. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the Senate CS for House Joint Resolution 14 State Affairs from committee with individual recommendations, and he attaches zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Well, appreciation for the sponsor from the House, and Mr. Coons, thank you for your hard work. The bill moves from committee with the attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations. We'll stand. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. But before we, if I could be a little casual.
Absolutely. That would not be too much of a departure in this committee.
Stuart Krueger, I just want to talk about Stuart real quick. You know, Stuart and our youngest son Cody went to school together, and I think I was your coach once upon a time in a couple of athletic events. But you know, I sit there and look at Stuart, and he's one of the futures of our legislative process. And he has a young brother that the one that I know is Gordon, who is of equally high caliber. And I'd just like to say that I'm glad to see you here. Went to Colony High School, right? And it's, you never know who you're going to bump into later on in life. And, Stuart, I'm glad to see you here in the legislature. And Shelley, good quality control on your part.
And may I say something? And I just want to add that I believe when you coached Stuart, my son was also on that
That's
team.
Right.
Just
a
fun facto.
Best coach you ever had, probably. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we better stop there. So, with that bill moved out of committee with the attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the report and we'll get it to the Senate Secretary. Senate State Affairs. We'll come back on the record at 8:27. Welcome, Colonel Weaver. This is a public process as well as our legislative process, and just why don't you reframe the issue of where we're at? Briefly, and then we're going to ask you to respond to some of the make comments about the legal opinions, or give you an opportunity to further amplify or expand on those when we come back.
Yes, sir.
Please, you're on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, I'm Staff Judge Advocate for the Adjutant General of the Alaska National Guard. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, again for this opportunity. To summarize what I believe we talked about yesterday, we had, going from the macro to the micro, the 30,000-foot level to the 5,000-foot level, we talked about the basic need for an ACMJ for the state of Alaska, one of the few states that doesn't have an ACMJ. We talked about the history on how we got there. It was all provided in a PowerPoint presentation. Commanders, and to include the Adjutant General, came up and explained as commanders the reason they believe we need the ACMJ. We talked about Article 15's non-judicial punishments, the no turn down provision, and then some history of the ACMJ. I think, sir, would you like me to go a little more detailed into that, or
go ahead.
I presented a PowerPoint presentation regarding Alaska Code of Military Justice. Again, it went through the need of the ACMJ, how we got there, moving forward, and the importance to Alaska for having an ACMJ. We talked about the organization of the militia, very complicated. The National Guard is very complicated. We didn't talk about this, but it's complicated because of we have multiple statuses. We're always in a different status. Let's see here. We talked about concurrent offenses on both the civilian and military side, how some of the offenses were civilian-like, and but many of the civilian-likes do affect the offenses do affect the good order and discipline of a particular unit. We talked about jurisdiction, again, non-judicial punishment, the different levels that each commander has, and from company to field grade to general officer going up the chain. And then we talked about, I displayed the under HB 126, the maximum sentence for confinement of each of the different offenses listed in the bill. Sir, is that adequate?
No, that's good enough. No, this is for the public's benefit to catch them up
more. Oh, right.
And I think you probably did it with more efficiency than we could have ever attempted to have done. So I just want to, because we have a short meeting today, Senator Coggett, let's leave. We wanted to make sure we wanted to reframe any of the issues or just, again, amplify on the goals and objectives. And I wanted to, maybe I can ask, we have a representative of our judicial system. Maybe I can ask Ms. Mead to join you, and we can have use this limited amount of time to have them on the record and interplay how these two justice systems work together. I'm still trying to get a grasp of that as well. Welcome, Ms.
To the chair. My name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I'd be happy to respond to questions. I am probably going to not be very helpful on this issue, but I'll be happy to try. My involvement in this bill was not substantial. At the end of the court-martial process, the defendant, or I think they're still called the defendant, does have the right to petition to the Supreme Court for final action, and my involvement with this bill was limited to seeing how that would work and working with those provisions.
The court system is pretty jealous of the judicial council process, and there's a process in here of the legislature confirming judicial. I'm trying to remember if I have the right version. You guys softening on that issue?
To the chair, I believe you're referring to the provisions about the governor appointing members of the Military Appeals Commission.
Yes.
And then confirmation by the legislature.
That does have a judicial component.
To the chair, that is not something that concerns the court system. There are many administrative law judges in the Office of Hearing Appeals within the executive branch. Those don't go through the Judicial Council. This is something that would be in the executive branch.
Are there administrative law judges that, and don't the administrative law judges go through the Alaska Judicial Council?
To the chair, no, they
none
don't.
None of them do?
Unless I'm mistaken, to my knowledge.
I believe our appeals judges, our administrative appeals judges, go through the Judicial Council, I think. We'll check on that.
To the chair, the Judicial Council deals with the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and our Superior and District Court judges.
It would have been nice if you were softening on that. Senator Willikowski.
Ask a general question. Does the court system have a position on this bill that's before us?
To the chair, Senator Willikowski, we don't. Again, I worked with the sponsor and the officers to ensure that the procedures that do involve the court system are something that are workable. The only things that touch us are the grand jury requirement in there, and we can accommodate the occasional grand jury. The guard stated that there would be quite a low number of these cases each year, and the cases that would ultimately go to the Supreme Court on a petition for hearing were something that they were willing to work with us, and we modified a few procedures in there to make it easy for us and still satisfied them. And so we just worked on procedure and don't have a position.
So is this similar to, let's say, if you disagree with an administrative or a regulatory decision, you can appeal to the Superior Court? Is that the same concept?
To the chair, yes, it is similar. The way I, in my simple world, view this bill is the person gets basically the trial at the court-martial, then they have their appeal to the Military Appeals Commission. That's all within the Guard. At the end of that, they have a right to petition for hearing to the Supreme Court for a final decision only if they were punished by incarceration, or that was the proposed punishment from the Military Appeals Commission. And that would be similar to agency decisions that can go to the Superior Court, but really more similar to the criminal context where you start with a trial, you have the right to appeal to the Court of Appeals, and then if you're dissatisfied that, you can petition for hearing to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Just Senator Fogler is working hard in these last days to try to get Senate Bill 91 passed. It's going to reclassify a lot of the offenses and penalties. Do you have any concerns if the traditionally civilian system has disparate, either lighter or heavier penalties, sanctions, offenses? Does that cause any constitutional problems?
To the chair, I'm not sure what constitutional problems this may raise. The court never has touched military offenses before, and they'll be new to the Supreme Court in the few cases that it may have to deal with under this bill. And I'm not sure what issues will arise in that context.
I think it's all our hope that there's not a lot of living examples, and that I'm only trying to look speculative, and I'm certainly Senator Coghill, you're working diligently on this. I don't know, but we have to ask the question of whether or not that does interplay, and it hasn't been clear. And I know what Senator Coghill would think it'd be a good problem to have to resolve, and that's but well. If you think more of that, if we bring you back back again, about the maybe talking to some of your colleagues, just so we know on the record, the other one's out of our grasp. It's in the other body. This one is here. So at least we can do with more informed consent, given that we're looking at passing this out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the comment that I would have, and we need some study on this, is side-by-side of some of the penalties in here, it looks like they're almost all consistently lower than our civil penalties and our legal penalties now and proposed in Senate Bill 91. So it looks like 10 years is the maximum that they feel that they can go with any. And that's just not true with the way we do other criminal law. So then it's a matter of the double jeopardy question. Do they line up appropriately? Would one defer to the other? Those are the kind of things that we'll have to put side by side, which I think is probably something the Department of Law and the whoever's proposing the ACMG would probably want to give us a side-by-side view of the way the penalty would be imposed, how they're consistent or congruent with our law, and where authorities are so different that the incongruency doesn't matter. Those types of things. We have to, I think that's what we're going to have to look at, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. And I just, this is just for discussion point. I'm not, it's Senator Wilkowski. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just, been a while since I really dove into the details on this, and I just forget it right now. But does my understanding and my recollection is that there's a deference to the civil court to the civilian courts first, and so if there were an assault or something, the superior court, the court system would have jurisdiction first, and then if they chose not to, then it could go to the military jurisdiction. Is my recollection correct, or correct me if I'm wrong?
He looks like he wants to talk.
Yeah, if I may. I don't know unless you're...
No, go ahead.
Through the chair. So the reason they would have... yes, but the reason that the civilian courts would have the primary jurisdiction, I guess, or is because it's a civilian offense. So, again, they'd look at it, and the prosecutor, prosecuting attorney would look at it and say, does this fit the elements of a civilian crime? And then if it does, then it would go to the civilian courts. But it wouldn't go to the civilian courts if it was just a military in this bill. Yes, sir.
And so just to alleviate the concerns, because I looked at the list, and it did appear that there's lesser penalties for some of the civilian crimes, but I think that the way the issue would go, you know, if you just sort of a flow chart in your head, someone committed an assault, the civilian courts would look at it first and decide whether or not they wanted to assert jurisdiction, and then if the civilian courts decided they did not, only then would it go to the military courts, and then the military courts would decide. And is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
If I could, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I think that is correct, except for the fact that the civilian courts don't exactly assert jurisdiction. We just wait. It would be completely up to the Department of Law whether they decided to file a case with us. We wouldn't know about it.
Senator Wilkowski. And so just to, I guess, alleviate concerns, which I think are valid, someone commits an assault. It's not like they can pick and say, I want to go to the military court because they have a lesser penalty. The Department of Law will, or the municipality or whoever will investigate, determine whether or not they should file a case under Alaskan statutes, the civilian statutes, and if they choose not to, then the military courts can investigate. Fair enough.
That's my understanding through the chair. Yes.
And then just on the double jeopardy, it doesn't seem like to me there would be a double jeopardy issue, but can you explain this? Once a civilian court convicts a person, would that take away the right of the military court to also take that person to trial, and vice versa, once the military court convicted or took a person to trial, would that take away the right of the civilian courts?
Through the chair, if I may. Yes, basically, as long as the elements match up for that particular crime.
And through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there is the jeopardy clause in the bill saying that jeopardy attaches through one of the proceedings.
Senator Wilkowski.
And then, so on the issue of punishments, if someone committed a very serious crime, my guess would be that the civilian courts the executive branch through the Department of Law would investigate. They would decide whether or not to press charges or not. If they felt the case was weak, they wouldn't go ahead and press charges. The military court could still do its own investigation. So, but my estimation is that you would have probably very, very few cases, assaults, rapes, murders, that would end up in your court, in the military court. Is that been your experience over the over the years?
Through the chair, yes, sir, absolutely. It's very, very rare that these cases come to court-martial.
And through the chair, I do agree, and that's why we do have it the zero fiscal note. We're hoping for very few cases under this.
And just to sort of close the loop, what my guess is that in other states, the experience is probably, and what I would guess the experience here would be, is that the cases that for which there is no civilian punishment, going AWOL, deserting your post, being insubordinate to your commanding officer, there is nothing in the Alaska statutes punishing that. You obviously would not have jurisdiction. Those are, I'm guessing, probably the vast amount of cases that would go before the military tribunal. Is that fair?
Through the chair, correct. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I noticed we have this. We noticed this for public testimony. Is there anybody online that is following this that would like to comment or ask any questions? Is there any public testimony? We'll go ahead and close the public testimony and leave open the option to reopen it if we have citizens. And I apologize that we have to cut this short. I'm losing my quorum. I am going to recess this meeting to the call of the chair and see if it's going to be very difficult to try to, if we're able to, if we have something we can get done today. If not, I think we'll spend most of our time in informal discussions and trying to clarify this. And it's intent to have it up tomorrow morning, and hopefully, if we have a quorum and a majority vote, we'll move it out of committee. Is the intent? That's going to be our goal. So with that, we'll stand in recess to the call of the chair without a definitive plan. We'll stand in recess.